From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am your high-energy host, Hunter Deusing, and joining me is a very fine political consultant indeed, Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
They're turning all the frogs gay. It's all the fluoride in the water.
I think it's all those birth control pills people are peeing into the toilets. They're turning the frogs gay and the amphibians into homosexuals. Yeah. And also joining me is a guy from the hippie town of Colorado, Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello, everybody in paranoid land.
Yeah, we got our Infowars.com water filters going.
Bone broth.
We've also got Super Male Vitality. Make sure that you don't have gay frogs when you have kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, Alex Jones does ruin your throat when you do his voice. John was like, I need water before the show.
Yeah, if you're going to do an Alex Jones, you're always going to rupture the cords. It's way too much on the throat. I always thought he faked it, then I realized, no, that's got to be his real voice. There's no way he could do that for like 3 hours a day.
No, no. I mean, his face already is turning purple.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
When he yells, when he screams.
And when he's not screaming, he's shuffling paper everywhere.
Shuffling, he's slapping it around. It's like hitting the He's just got papers there so he can like shuffle and throw them. Like they don't really have anything written on them.
No, they don't. I'm sure when he's short of things to say as well, he just go to like do keywords like, you know, goddamn George Soros.
What Alex Jones does when he's out of things to say is he rips his shirt off and starts screaming. That's what he does.
Yeah.
It guarantees a viral video.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, but
And but you know the reason we're doing Alex Jones, the reason we're Alex Jones posting at the beginning of the show is because we're doing today's movie is a documentary about one of Alex Jones's bros, one of his close pals, Mr. Roger Stone.
Got Roger Stone coming up next
Roger
hour.
Stone. Hey. Roger Stone, Roger, don't go anywhere. Chink Uger wants to debate you.
This movie, Get Me Roger Stone, which is a documentary film, Netflix original. So easy to see if you've got a Netflix subscription. Directed by Dylan Brank, Daniel DiMauro, and Morgan Pame. I don't know what's up with these names. Anyway, what this is a documentary that is trying to take Roger Stone. For those of you out in Rio Linda, Roger Stone is a political consultant / strategist for the Republican Party. At age 19, he was named in the Watergate scandal. So he's been around since his teenage years in the world of politics. And he's been involved in many campaigns. He worked with Nixon, Reagan, both Bushes, and Donald Trump. And, you know, this documentary is kind of trying to make him the next, like, Lee Atwater or Karl Rove, like, kind of a boogeyman of Republican, like, big brain strategy to sort of make him the new, like, person to hate, to see as behind the curtain on everything, I think. Except unlike Karl Rove and Lee Atwater and people like that, Stone actually revels in this. Stone actually loves being a villain. He's kind of a, you know, for a guy who's been around a long time, Roger Stone kind of feels more like the, kind of like in the mold of Milo Yiannopoulos, where you revel in being a villain. And really, Milo is in the mold of Roger Stone in a way, like, you know, being a sort of fashion conscious, villainous conservative. Libertarian leaning conservative.
Just quickly, by the way, as well, Milo is coming to Melbourne next week, I think. No, 2 weeks from now.
Oh, interesting.
Speaking tour. But the thing is, nobody knows where he's going to be yet. Tickets are on sale, and you won't find out until a few days before the show where he's going to be. To avoid
to avoid the
SJWs, yeah, and all
Just to make they have to organize really quick instead of like way in advance.
Yep, yeah, but I mean, I'm sure they'll turn up. I mean, I'm really, really tempted to go to that second show.
If you want to see how good leftists are at organizing, just go to some of the websites for like Antifa and stuff. Like they have like guides on articles on just like, here's what you do, here's what you do when you show up, here's where to show up, here's what to do, bring this stuff. Like they're just, they have like people funding it and people organizing it. They're very good at that, so I'm sure once he announces it they'll be there.
Nah, they're not very good at it. They're not very good.
No, leftists are very good at organizing. Do not underestimate these people.
because they've got no fucking job to go to.
The 20th century would not have gone the way that it did if leftists were not very good at organizing. Trust me, they are very good at, and they're very good at disguising it as grassroots, like spontaneous stuff, rather than stuff they've planned out ahead of time. But
until they get punched out by a 58-year-old conservative writer, like they did over here in Melbourne. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. When I talk about leftists organizing, I'm talking about in America. I don't know about Australia.
You know? Well, they had Andrew Bolt. I don't know if I brought this up before, who's a very, very prominent conservative writer here, probably the country's most prominent one, and outspoken conservative writer slash political commentator. And he was attacked by Antifa dickheads here in Melbourne. They threw glitter and glue or something on like that. Little did they know, though, that he was actually an ex-boxer, and he punched the shit out of him. Iron one out as well. And the dickhead went on to social media saying, I got hit by Andrew Bolt, and just gave away his identity. And nothing happened to Andrew Bolt, so...
Well, that reminds me of, like, one of the greatest trolls of all time was when Uwe Boll challenged film critics to a boxing match.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that Raging Boll documentary.
Yeah, Boll neglected to mention that he had he had a lot of boxing experience.
Oh, of course. You wouldn't challenge people to a boxing match if you haven't done it before in the past.
Like, he beat the crap out of, like, Lotax Kayanka from Something Awful and, you know, some guy from Ain't It Cool News. And he just, like, sent all these people to the hospital. It was great. People are like, oh my gosh, Hunter, that's horrible. No, it's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny. No, it's funny. It is funny.
Just because, like, crapping on Uwe Boll was, like, this sort of really basic thing to do on the internet.
Oh, it was so hip to piss on Uwe Boll and his films. I mean, his films aren't great, but, you know.
He wasn't the worst director of all time.
No.
He's made some truly awful movies, but... Uwe Boll is a personality. You cannot diss that guy. I mean, he is a one of a kind, you know.
And he's always making something. So,
oh, that guy's never not working. So.
That's right. I think all the directors out there who fucking virtual signal in their films are worse than Uwe Boll will ever be.
Oh yeah. No. Uwe Boll, like, if anything, was intent on offending as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Like, he's appearing in his own films in Lederhosen talking about how he funds his movies with Nazi gold.
Well, I had that one. Was it House of the Dead, I think it was called? Or something?
Oh, House of the Dead. Oh,
yeah. And he was tied up. He was tied up at the start of the film, he was tied up and captured by a couple of film nerds in thingo, and they're saying, oh, for crimes against film, blah, blah, blah. Uwe Boll, you must be punished. And he just looks at the camera and goes, what do I give a shit? It's like, he basically sums him up. What is it? What do I give a shit?
Yeah, like, he did, because he did House of the Dead, and that's the movie that sort of made his name. Like, if you were keeping up with bad movies on VHS, you probably knew who he was from, like, stuff like, I forget the names of some of these movies. But he'd done some, like, bad direct-to-video stuff with, like, Michael Paré and stuff. But, after that once he did House of the Dead, that's where like everybody became aware of Uwe Boll, because that movie was so bad. And then he did this like a new cut of it where it had him getting kidnapped and being forced to watch the movie, and he was like, I don't care.
But that had the guy from Das Boot as well. Wolfgang Petersen. No, not Wolfgang. That's the filmmaker.
Jürgen Prochnow.
Jürgen Prochnow, thanks. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right,
Jürgen Prochnow was in a few of his movies. Like, the best one was when Uwe Boll did In the Name of the King with Jason Statham and Burt Reynolds.
Oh, that's right. I haven't seen it, but yeah, I remember you saying about that.
Oh. And he got Ching Su Tung to do the stunts.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's true.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, he In the Name of the King, very entertaining movie. Just for good and bad reasons. I mean,
that's the only one I've seen, just because it was a Statham movie and Burt Reynolds. Tongue in action. That was and Burt Reynolds. That was the only reason to watch it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It remains the only one I've sat through.
Yeah. House of the Dead, highly entertaining. Anyway, we're not talking about Uwe Boll. We're talking about Roger Stone.
The Netflix now, documentary, right?
Yes. So this movie, I've been wanting to see it for a while. I think Stu watched it, and that kind of made me, oh, we should do this on the show. But this movie, it's kind of funny because this is a movie where it's the film going wow, just wow at Roger Stone. Right. And but the thing about Roger Stone is he's so likable and fun that it doesn't really work. Like, all of the people in this film talking about how bad Roger Stone is. And you have Roger Stone, and he's just like this... He's like a comic book character. He's great.
Yeah, pretty much.
What were some of you... What were, Stuart, you're an Australian. You're halfway across the world. What were some of your impressions about this movie?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize how influential he was as a political operative. I had no idea. I thought... I wasn't really familiar with him before Alex Jones. I had no idea he had a hand.
Me neither, to be honest.
Yeah.
I first heard of him because of Alex Jones and Milo, I think. Because Milo sort of... I think Milo Yiannopoulos... I think he sort of based a lot of his persona on Roger Stone.
Oh, for sure.
Because they're both like kind of... They both revel in being villains, and they're both very fashion conscious. And you know, Roger Stone, like, if he's not gay, but if he was, you wouldn't be shocked.
No, he reminds me of John Inman from Are You Being Served? If you know who that is, just not as effeminate.
I've heard of Are You Being Served? I don't know anything about
it. Okay, yeah,
yeah. They used to air it on PBS around here, like every night, but I never watched it.
Yeah, it's not really funny. It's just, yeah, it's not the best of the British sitcoms. But yeah, he reminds me, when you look at him, of John Inman. It's a hard word to say when you... Yeah. Anyway, but obviously, you listen to John Inman, he's as gay AF when he talks, but Roger Stone is not. But yeah, the thing that really took me was the 2000... presidential race between Bush and Al Gore, and I remember the whole recount thing and all that, and I had no idea that basically if it wasn't for Roger Stone, there would have been no George W. Bush in power.
Yeah, and
that's, you know, stunning that one man can create history pretty much right there.
Yeah. I there is one thing I wondered about this documentary though, speaking of that, I kind of wonder if the filmmakers weren't kind of exaggerating Stone's influence a little bit. And hear me out, because Stone, you know, if you throw a lot of allegations about stuff at him, like when they said, you know, oh, this Watergate mastermind is taking over the Young Republicans or something when he was 25, you know, really his role was pretty tiny in Watergate, but... You know, he was more than happy to take on the role of Watergate mastermind.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if a lot of stuff about Stone in this movie isn't exaggerated, and Roger Stone is just more than happy to take that.
Well, the only way you'll find that out, really, is when you go to some sort of documentary about Watergate, say about half a dozen years after the event. If you're not hearing Roger Stone's name there as much as, say, you would G. Gordon Liddy, then he hasn't had that much of a hand in it. It's all.
Well, I just mean the stuff in general in this movie, like.
Yeah, but I'm saying he's in that particular instance, he's taking like a dramatic license with the whole Watergate scandal because it's so removed, nearly 50 years from now, yeah. 45 years, whatever it is.
I did think it was really interesting because this movie goes through, like, half of it is Stone's political history, and then half of it, well, like a third, really is the Trump campaign.
Mm.
But, you know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting was how he sabotaged Pat Buchanan's campaign in the Reform Party in 2000.
He killed the Reform Party. That's what stunned me the most, and I had no idea.
Yeah, like, because I remember Ross Perot was such a hated person among Republicans, because they were like, he's the reason we have Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I remember a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, I'm voting for Ross Perot. Like, he really got a big chunk of the vote. And so you could see that the Reform Party would be something they would want to neutralize. And Pat Buchanan, who I probably agree with the most politically.
Yeah.
In this stuff. Like, Pat Buchanan is probably the most similar to me when it comes to political views out of all the people in this movie. But, you know, I thought it was very interesting how Trump was sort of brought in to destroy the Reform Party and ensure that Bush could get elected.
I don't know too much about this Reform Party, which I was going to ask you guys. Hunter, I wasn't sure if you'd remember it too much. John, I know you would. Are they similar to what the Tea Party was about a decade later?
John, maybe you'd be better equipped.
It seemed like it was Republicans pissed off that Bush 41 had actually raised taxes when he said there would be no new taxes. And it was kind of, I think, they were the conservatives ticked off that Bush 41 was not continuing the Reagan era,
right.
Basically. It's like he was a, because Bush 41, it's more of a neoconservatism that was against what Reagan was promoting. So you basically had a White House run by two different types of Republicans. Ross Perot really tapped into that kind of populist outrage and stuff. And of course, everything he was warning about back then, we still talk about today, like overspending and the budget.
Yeah.
I mean, everything he talked about was true. And neither of the two parties were talking about it. And then they allowed him into the debates. And I think that was probably the first time the third party candidate was actually allowed into the debates. And he won the debates. I mean, he did. He came off as pointing out where the problems were, while the other two, meaning Bush 41, George Bush, and Bill Clinton, were just kind of dancing around the issues and doing the same old, same old. I think it got a lot of probable libertarians and a lot of populists and many
paleo
of those
cons, paleo
right
cons.
Paleo cons, and a lot of them would go on to form the Tea Party. By the way, contrary to what a lot of people will tell you now, the Tea Parties were actually forming when Bush 43 was in office.
Yes.
It's because he had greenlit the stimulus program. That's what pissed them off, and they did not want the stimulus to happen. And so the Tea Party actually predates the Obama election, and then also it's a lot of the same people who voted for Trump, and except for whatever reason, Trump was able to get that message out stronger to the populist across the country, and he won. That's why he won the union vote. He won the workers' vote. The working class, blue collar, flyover country American that, you know, felt like, why are my jobs being globalized? Why are they being outsourced? Why am I told I've got to learn software programming if I want to work and feed my family? You know, why is this job? You know, it's the same old that's always gone on, but Trump was the first candidate to talk about it. So he was kind of like, he's kind of like the Ross Perot that won the election, kind of like how Ronald Reagan was thought to be if Goldwater had actually won the election when he was running against Johnson in the 60s, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because Trump definitely feels like a Reform Party candidate. He's not a traditional Republican, and that's why the party was flipping out over him.
Some of our Republican guests and co-hosts still don't like Trump.
Yeah, of course. They don't like him because, you know, the neoconservatives took over the Republican Party, and neoconservatives are, you know, their own breed. They're not like, I don't know, they don't represent, you know, the blue collar American. And the Democratic Party definitely does not, even though they claim to.
Oh, yeah.
But Trump was, you know, running on issues that the Reform Party was running on back in the day. It's just, I'm sorry, you need to get that Republican brand if you're going to win. You can't run on a new brand. It just doesn't. You mean a third party is a way to cram your issues into the Democrat or Republican talking points. It's not really a viable way to win the presidency. It's just a way to get issues out there.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. Just want to get your opinion on this. Do you think if Ted Cruz had won the Republican nomination and then won the presidency, there'd be this much of an outcry by Democrats?
Oh, of course.
You still reckon it would be?
Democrats go hard and heavy against whatever Republican is in office. It does not matter if they agree with 99% of the issues that Republican is pushing. That guy will always be Hitler to them. And they will meme him as Hitler. Ted Cruz would absolutely – I mean, Ted Cruz is violently hated by the Democrats. I mean,
oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. They despise him. And, you know, but – it's just so funny right now. All these mainstream news companies are talking about they're fondly remembering Bush.
Yeah, like the fuck? I remember Bush Hitler and all that, you know, that chimpanzee and all that shit.
Yeah, no, George W. Bush was one of the mainstream media went so hard against him. I mean, Bush derangement syndrome was a real thing, and the thing is Bush is aligned with them on so many issues, but
he's a fucking neoliberal. He's a neoliberal, and they were hating him. I'm like, I kept telling him, I said, you guys need to calm down, because it's like he's nowhere near as radical as you say he is, and everything.
You know what's funny though? I had college professors. I remember this. I had college professors who were total pinkos, who hated Bush.
Yeah.
But they said he's good on immigration. They said he understands immigration because he wants to flood the country with illegals.
Right.
You know, they praised him on immigration.
Of course.
Back then, you know, so they were definitely like, I had these professors who were like, but he's really great on these issues. Like, they definitely gave him credit for the stuff that
fucking
they liked him on.
Dirty word professor is, as far as I'm concerned these days.
But it's funny. It's just funny. Like I was thinking back on that the other day. I was thinking, man, you know, even back then they knew that they liked certain policies of his because they aligned with theirs.
The reason why I asked about Trump v. Cruz is because Trump's a nonconformist. He is a populist. And he seems like it doesn't seem like he's obviously the sort of person who can't be manipulated by the swamp, if you will, the DC swamp. So is that why there's such an outcry against him compared to a Cruz? It probably looks like he probably could be manipulated by the DC swamp.
I think I think Trump is susceptible to that, just as anybody is, because occasionally he'll sort of soften his stance or whatever. But I think Donald Trump represents what he represents is infinitely more reprehensible to neoliberals, and that includes Republicans and Democrats, than, you know, anything the Bush family represents.
They're the ones you call rhinos, right?
Yeah, and like, you know, this stuff with Roy Moore is happening, where he's being accused of sexual misconduct, but Mitt Romney and John McCain will come out and tell Roy Moore that simply the allegations, he must step aside, but they refuse to say the same thing about Al Franken. Who's also a total pervert and has been you know, photographed being a pervert and is just, you know, overall just a hideous reptilian creature. And, you know,
and an unfunny bastard as well in his day.
Oh, yeah, he was not funny either.
No.
And, but you do not see the McCains and the Romneys and these Republicans going after Franken. They go after Republicans that do not represent the neoliberal thing. Because the Trump presidency, the Trump election candidacy, I should say, just represents an overall existential threat to Republican-Democrat hegemony, and that this is all pro-wrestling. It's all BS. It's all just they're all pals. You know, you see pictures of Bush and Ted Kennedy cavort laughing together and stuff. These people are all friends. They all,
of course, they are.
They don't hate each other. They're all just it's all just a contest, and they and this outside stuff is it's represents an existential threat, and that's why we've seen such a horrified reaction. I mean, like, the reaction to Trump is unbelievable. It's created this paradigm shift in our politics. But
I think the only other person who would create this much hysteria amongst your left wingers over there, if they were elected president, would be either Roger Stone or Alex Jones.
Well, and Stone obviously has
intention,
aspirations to the presidency.
Yeah,
he's a guy who likes the game, and. You know, I think this documentary really makes the case that Roger Stone is the swamp, and there's a lot of this documentary talks a lot about how Roger Stone is part of politics as usual, and that's probably true, but I think you know, Stone has been, as he said for years, he wanted Trump to run for president because he knew he could win, and. You know, I don't think this criticism I have about this documentary is a lot of it is journalists kind of wowing about Roger Stone and talking about how reprehensible he is.
Right.
But Roger Stone seems much more entertaining and edgy and likable than they do. They just seem like lecturing school moms. And plus, nothing they say feels genuine to me.
Are you talking about people like Tucker Carlson, obviously, who's interviewed?
No. Tucker's awesome. I'm not talking.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think
I'm talking about that cat lady from The New Yorker, Jane Mayer.
Yeah, I know, but this is made by Netflix, and even Roger Stone says during the interview, he's been, you know, the camera crews there, he goes, oh, these are a bunch of liberal cucks here. So yeah. So I think they're obviously bringing a bipartisan approach to it, and not just a praise fest on Stone, but not a hit fest either, you know?
Well, I think if you look at the narrative of the documentary, it is ultimately a leftist movie, the way it ends, especially. But it also, Stone is the star of the show, and Stone's likability and his just overall enjoyable kind of trolliness, pardon my French, but shitlordiness as well, is impossible not to like, you know?
Yeah, but a lot of that comes from the fact that he's on our side.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. I mean, if he was a left-winger and was like that, I probably wouldn't have even watched it. I couldn't give a shit. To be honest,
no, but it's kind of funny though, because we are used to documentaries pumping up leftist politicians and leftist heroes. And
exactly.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of screen time is given to people like Jane Mayer and Harry Siegel, who are like, oh, you know, he's such an awful person, and this is, you know, and talking about how morally reprehensible he is, and how he doesn't really represent the blue collar working American, but I'm sitting there thinking, and you guys do, like,
yeah, they,
you guys,
they would,
you
yeah.
guys, you guys don't give a, you guys do not give a flip about regular working class Americans. You guys have pushed for their destruction in your media for so long. You can I mean, I'm sorry, but if you're going to talk about that as a criticism, like, you guys do not care about working class Americans.
It's all about it's all about my gun reform, my refugees. It's all it's about for them these days. My Islam.
And so, bathrooms. They somehow thought that was a winning ticket. This is how dumb they were. Is like, we're a tranny tease. They actually think that's a winning issue.
Did you know?
So people do not care. People do not want, like, men going into women's bathrooms. They just.
No!
That is not the hill you want to die on, leftists. I'm sorry.
And did you know? Did you guys know that there's a keyword that Facebook has, those fucking idiots over there? There's a keyword they have. If you type the word tranny into a post, you will be banned.
Oh, yeah,
How hilarious.
That's pathetic.
Social networks have really cracked down on all that stuff, but...
thinking about my ban I got... Sorry, boss. I was thinking about the ban I got for 7 days, where I posted about the tranny on fucking Twitter, and I must have said... Oh, that's right, I put something, I put the word tranny in there, and it's like, oh, banned for 7 days, so... Yeah, but I found it on, not InfoWars, but what's the show that Owen Schroyer does? The War Room, which is an extension of InfoWars, anyway. And, if you put the word tranny into a post, you will be banned for 3 days, 7 days, whatever it is. Depends how far down the rabbit hole you are with, you know, there's levels on Facebook. Is a warning, then there's 12 hours... 24 hours, 3 days, 7 days, 30 days, and then there's Anthony Nesbitt. It's like, it's as far as you can go. Sorry, Anthony. But, yeah.
Anthony Nesbitt.
He's public enemy number one with Kuckerberg.
Yeah.
Zolly Becker gets banned a lot, too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He's got several sock puppet accounts that he pops up under.
Oh yeah, he even comments on his own posts with his sock accounts.
Well, I actually message Anthony sometimes. I go, "Don't tell me you're back in jail again." And it's like no response. 30 days later, yeah, I was back in jail, but you know, the other account was freed up. The one with the Paddy Chayefsky picture on it, so he started using that.
Yep,
too funny.
He cracks me up.
Speaking of that, I got to be real quick. I got to give a massive shout out to Anthony as well. He was good enough to send me a couple of films he didn't want on Blu-ray. He sent me his copy of Never Say Never Again, which I was after, and also a film called Where's Papa, which I'd always wanted to see but I'd never seen, and also a USB stick with a bunch of like movies of just obscure as fuck movies. So I got to say a big shout out. Thanks, Anthony. You are, as we say over here, a fucking champion. Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
Where's Papa? Yeah,
Where's that Papa? Here. That's what
I have,
Adam Carolla
I have not seen
saying.
That in decades. I don't think it would hold up today, but it's interesting.
I want to see
that's
it anyway.
Adam Carolla would always say to female callers on Loveline.
Yeah.
Where's Papa? Where's Papa?
Well, if you see the movie, like, the movie is astonishingly tasteless for something from its era. Like, it's still, like, offensive today.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be banned now for... There's a couple of jokes that Stu will pick up on it right away when he sees it.
Yeah. But, yeah, so getting back to shit book, yeah, the word tranny will get you banned.
I miss the more libertarian days of the internet. I don't know what's happened. Like, somehow it's turned into some left-wing...
It's turned into a social justice warrior hellhole.
It's awful. It's like, I remember when it was the 90s, the internet was very libertarian. It's extremely libertarian. Mm-hmm. It's just like, now it's pathetic.
Yeah, it is. It's shit. I mean, Twitter, my account...
Shithole for advertisers, basically. Because the advertising on Facebook is driving me insane.
Oh.
And I've got ad blockers, and it's like, it's still popping up and shit.
Yeah, I can't stand it. I mean, as I've said before, unless it was for this show, I probably would have just ditched Facebook and said, stick up your ass.
If it wasn't for the show, I probably would not be on Facebook or I'd check in like once a month.
Well, and my thing with the reason the internet's become less libertarian is because it's become so centralized.
Yeah.
Twitter, Facebook, and these are the central hubs of the internet now. Google... Like, you have Google, Twitter, and Facebook are the the center in which they're the sun of the internet.
Yeah.
And so as a result, these companies have a lot of power over speech. Like, if you are shut out of these platforms, it's going to really affect your reach. You know, yeah. A lot of people aren't going to see you. Like, whereas back in the day, the internet was like image boards and, you know, it was, you know, all kinds of different groups. Like, you know, 4chan's roots go way back. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah. 4chan reminds me of, like, looking at the internet back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Go on there.
It really does. Yeah,
totally.
Open. It's funny. We talk all this, and Roger Stone, I think, was banned from Twitter like a month ago.
He was. Yeah. Oh, he's suing them. As well. Yeah. I think they picked the wrong dog to fight with their Twitter. Fucking idiots.
Well, and I think that some person who worked at Twitter, like when they were being fired, they, as their last act of their last middle finger was they suspended Trump's account.
Yeah. I saw that. Did you see the woman who did it? Or the thing who did it? My God. SJW written all over it. Oh, my goodness.
Blue or purple hair.
Yep.
Overweight.
Yep.
Cat lady glasses.
Hates cat. Men because she's fucking ugly as all shit.
Right.
But that whole thing, though, just shows you how much power these companies have, that they can, you know, remove the platform of the president of the United States. And frankly, Donald Trump's Twitter game was a big part of him getting elected.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump is good at Twitter.
Yeah. He's the only reason a lot of people are reading Twitter. If he was banned, I swear Twitter participation would go down like 40%.
Well, and I think Twitter's really upping their sort of crime think parameters and the way they ban people.
Well, like,
and as you see people get more and more people get banned from Twitter, I think Twitter's going to die because simply there will not be. It's just going to be an echo chamber and nobody's going to be interested anymore.
Yeah. Well, they can't actually get rid of Trump's account because it's classed as information because he's the president.
Well, yeah. But it's one of those things where it shows you that companies like Google, Facebook, and Twitter, they just have too much power, frankly.
Well, the thing is, I think with Roger Stone suing Twitter, if he wins, and if he wins, it can be a massive shot in the arm to these social media groups. Like, don't be silencing right-wing voices, because you can. And it could also be a knock-on effect. Others might start doing a class action against Facebook saying, you know what, we're being fucking cancelled out all the time because of our conservative views.
And Twitter and Facebook are different because Twitter will ban you and that's it, right? They'll just kill your account and you lose your followers, you lose everything, and you have to create a new account or a SOC account or whatever.
Yeah.
But Facebook tries to correct your behavior. They just suspend you for a little while and then they let you
will
back.
You will conform, slave. Yeah.
No. Like, Facebook's a little more, they try to discipline you.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the day when somebody works out.
Bad boy.
I can't wait for the day when somebody works out how to get around the algorithm that when you're blocked, you can still post. It's got to happen one day. Someone's got to work it out.
That would be interesting if that happened.
It really would, because then it's just a free-for-all. They want to keep blocking, that's fine. You know how you can see, I don't know if you guys have ever been blocked, but you can see, you can read everything, you just can't reply. You can't like something, or you can't reply. When the day when somebody works out how to get around that, it's going to be a free-for-all on there. You can post whatever you fucking want, it won't matter. Unless they literally take your account and remove it. That's all you're going to do.
If only Friendster had come out on top.
I know.
Facebook had basically ripped off Friendster.
You wouldn't need Gab, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Gab's actually not bad. I don't know if you guys are on there, but I jump in there with our account sometimes and have a look, and it's, it's good fun on there.
Yeah, Gab, the only thing about Gab is that, like, part of the fun of Twitter is you can, like, attack these, you know, mainstream journalists and stuff like that.
Well, fucking
with Gab, it's mostly just like people who've been banned from Twitter.
Well, you can't. You go to the iTunes store, or you go to
problems.
Go to the iTunes store or go to the Google Play store and look for the Gab app. You won't find it. They've removed it from there.
Yeah, they've removed it. Yeah.
Fucking assholes, I tell you.
And again, Apple's another company that's really bad on this stuff. They're they're very Orwellian. They're like ever since Tim Cook took over, that company's been
awful. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, get back to this documentary.
So so Stu, what were some other thoughts you had just being an outsider on American issues with Roger Stone? What were some things you learned or like besides his influence on the 2000 election?
Well, I did notice in there that the term "Make America Great Again" was said by Ronald Reagan back in 1980, I believe it was.
Oh yeah, Ronald Reagan.
He didn't run with that slogan, but he did say it, and obviously Trump
said
has.
He said it quite a few times.
I've
seen several clips of him saying it. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was Trump's slogan, obviously, as everybody knows. So he was not the inventor of that term, people. For those of you a bit younger than us, it was actually Ronald Reagan, which I did know about, but I'd never heard him say it. Speaking of that, just real quick, on the iTunes store, I think I've said it before in the past, but I'm going to bring it up again. There is a audiobook on the iTunes store. I think in the US it's $3.99, and it's in Australia it's $5.99, because, you know, like Australia, everything's more expensive. It's an audiobook about speeches by Ronald Reagan, and it's like 22 hours long. That is the steal of the century on iTunes. If you can get it, get it. Because it's a fascinating listen. That Ronald Reagan, I had no idea really, or now that I look back on it, was such a great orator. And
he was an actor. He's good at
it. His speeches were probably the last really consistently great speeches from a president.
Brilliant to listen to. I really didn't. I was too young to appreciate Ronald Reagan back then. But it's good to go back on these speeches and listen to him and hear what a smart individual he was, or his writer, whoever it was for him. I don't know.
I think Peggy, what's her name? She's a columnist.
Peggy Noonan?
Yeah. She was the, I think, his one of his speech writers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
Reagan was very good. He had a lot of good one-liners and government is not the... government is the problem. You know that phrase. You know, is still.
But it's more the way, and it's not a knock on Donald Trump at all. It's the delivery of the way Reagan would say it was very calm, very concise, very clear, and spoken in an authoritative manner. Whereas Trump's like, now is the time. We're going to get rid of all the rapists. And it's like everything's just screaming and pointing and all that sort of stuff. Where it's complete contrast to Reagan.
Off the cuff, if Trump likes to go off the cuff, like, and when you go off the cuff, you're going to have moments that are good. And then you're going to have, you know, a lot of filling air and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some Trump stuff where I'm kind of like, ah, this isn't so good. But then he'll have these moments where he... you know, really knocks out of the park.
Oh yeah, his spontaneity can be very, very amusing as well at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was something I wanted to bring up that I had written down here. Just to guys, go. It's only $4 if you're in the US, and it is absolutely brilliant. You'll probably get to appreciate how good of a leader Ronald Reagan was just by this small collection of it's 22 hours, so it's quite a collection, but. You know, compared to the 8 years he ran as president, it's you'll appreciate it more. Like I did with John Howard as well. Even I bagged John Howard a couple of years ago. I said, "Oh, he's a dick and all that sort of stuff." But I read up on John Howard, our prime minister here for 13 years, from 1994 to 2007, and starting to appreciate just how much he did for this country. So yeah. It's a bit of hindsight there.
Well, I was going to say Reagan was probably as close as you're going to get to Charlton Heston being president.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
With the acting experience and stuff, and actors are trained to basically, you know, give perfect speeches. So it's like,
yeah.
that's why you got that. I'd probably praise a collection of Heston speeches as an RA president. You know, as great material.
Yeah, I mean, Heston was very similar. Like, from my cold, dead hands. You know,
yeah, Jim Steranko said every time he interviewed Charlton Heston that Charlton Heston was the only person he interviewed that every word, every sentence was perfect. didn't have to edit anything when he was transcribing it. It was like everything was perfect and clear, and you know, and he interviewed hundreds of actors over the years when he was running his preview magazine, media scene preview, and he said Heston was just like every word perfect.
So, John, what were some of your takeaways from this documentary?
Well, what I saw it as an attempt to create a hit piece on Stone that backfires because all of his left-wing liberal critics are such goofballs and so unaware of how stupid they sound. And the fact that Stone is, it's almost like they wanted you to be shocked that, oh, he's a swinger and he's a bit of a perv and he's got tattoos and he's fashion obsessed and, you know, he's kind of like crazy or something. And as if that all conservatives are supposed to be like Alex Keaton on Family Ties, the Michael J. Fox character.
Well, I told a normie conservative earlier today that Stone has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back, and this is somebody who would not like tattoos, and they thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, because they've always wanted it to be that, oh, you know, conservatives are Jerry Falwell and you know, Alex P. Keaton and all that type of nonsense. They've really pushed that cliche very well, and of course Ben Shapiro kind of reinforces it anytime he makes a media appearance.
Oh, but, absolutely. Yeah.
But the thing is, the truth is a lot of conservatives and even some Republicans are just as much of an alternative type of personality as anybody you'll find on the left. And I conversed with one of our listeners about who had seen this documentary, and he was like, oh, you know, he's such a repulsive character. I said, if you think he's the only one like that working for both sides, you're fooling yourself, because there's probably 100 Roger Stones.
Oh, yeah.
Democrats. There's 100 Roger Stones probably also working for the Republicans, unacknowledged. It's like there's all sorts of weird characters in politics, always has been. But this documentary trying to make sure, like, oh, you know, he's a hypocrite or whatever. It's like, no, the libertarian conservative or the libertarian wing of the Republican Party has been something that the Democrat liberals can in the left have never figured out. They've never figured that out. They tried to say, oh, Ayn Rand was, you know, this writer who pushed, like, killing people or something, you know, or being just mean to everybody. It's like, no, actually Ayn Rand was very worshipped by liberals until about the last 20 years or so.
No, she was. I mean, I remember typical liberals pushing books like Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead as great literature until it became this animated, she became this animating figure in the conservative, in Republicans, and then all of a sudden it was, oh, we don't like her anymore.
Right. She wants you to be an asshole. That became
her
insult for conservatives. Assholes.
Yes, they want you to hate, you know, make people starve and stuff like that.
They hate poor people. They don't care about poor people. We care about poor people. Yeah, that's why you globalize their fucking jobs.
Yeah, that's why you endorse policies that drive their wages down, you loathsome reptiles. No, that's something about this documentary that I thought was hilarious, was seeing all these lefty journalists from like the New Yorker and the Daily Beast talk about how Stone does, these Republicans don't really care about the working class. And I'm like, yeah, well, you don't either. So screw it, you know. they don't care about that, these people. And them trying to undermine that message, it's just funny because the mask has been so ripped off of these people. And also, this woman from the New Yorker, who I just found her. She's this cat lady, Jane Meyer.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're not very fond of her, are you?
Oh no, she just.
Yeah, you brought her up several times here, Hunter.
Yeah, no. Like, I found her.
What are you, sexist man?
I found, pretty much. I found her totally repulsive. She was talking about how they don't like the rules and they go against the rules and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there thinking, when have you people ever cared about this stuff? You know, you guys, I'm sorry, but I believe every one of these leftists is a Kool-Aid drinking Alinskyite who just says, hold the enemy to their standards, but have no standards for yourself. They don't have standards. They just want to hold conservatives to those standards. And frankly, Roger Stone is a guy who is a degenerate when it comes to sex. Like, yeah. Let's be honest. he's a total pervert. Like, Rogers, yeah. Like, frankly, socially, in the realm of social conservatism, Roger Stone and I don't really agree on very much.
Now, but, see, I agree with Roger Stone on a shitload of stuff.
Yeah, I actually disagree with him on a lot of things, but I like his. I think he's a good strategist, and he does good things for our people. So I'm down with the Raj.
Yeah, but thing is, I don't agree with him as well on some stuff. Like he says he's pro-choice. I'm not pro-choice.
I am a practicing hardcore Catholic. So I'm with you there.
Yep. Whereas like, John,
he was talking.
John's pro-choice, aren't you? From memory or not?
I'm neither pro-choice nor pro-life. I'm just pro-football.
Geez, you're the only one watching it in America. Okay, we found it.
No, not anyone. No, I watch college football.
So oh, college.
Hey, also, if it's an SEC game on Saturdays, I'll watch it.
Like Roger Stone says as well, he's pro-gay marriage, which I'm not. So there's a few things I disagree with him on.
He's a libertarian. He's a personal responsibility, purely liberal on personal responsibility, which I think is the way most Americans are. I think more than half are more aligned with his views, but none of these views are explicitly displayed by either party.
Mm.
I think
the so-called Democrats can't even be really libertarian in their, when they're promoting, when they're talking. They can't.
I think they're hamstrung. I don't think they're allowed to be. For fear of backlash from their own party.
It's possible. Or they think they're going to scare older voters. Boy, they didn't give a shit now, but with the whole tranny thing. It's like they really just don't care.
I mean, trannies make up... How much they make up of the population, trannies, really? Like
0.003%.
Yes, it's all this pandering to trannies. Like, oh, trannies. I mean, I don't get it, okay? Someone wants to live like that. All right, whatever you want, but don't force your agenda on us. Don't start saying. Where was it? I saw it was on on InfoWars. I think it was. Yeah, it was where they had at a school somewhere in the US. I think it was New Jersey, where school children were visited by trannies who read books, and then. Their visit was laced as well with pro-LGBT alphabet soup agenda. It's like, look, you want to live like that, don't you fucking dare force it on children. You cunts, don't you dare force that on children. All right? Let them be adults, let them grow up, and let them work themselves out. That's where I draw a fucking hard line and really pisses me off.
Yeah, well, that's the People's Republic of New Jersey for you.
No, oh, God.
It's absolutely... New Jersey's insane. Like, I probably said it on the show before, but I remember getting out at a gas station in New Jersey, and they pump your gas. You're not allowed to touch the gas pump in New Jersey.
Is that because of union?
Because you have environmental regulation as well.
Environmental? What?
I swear to God, because they are trained to not allow any gas vapor to escape.
One thing, I'm glad you brought up environmentalism, because that was one thing that I thought was really triggering in this documentary was they were talking about how they were trying to undermine this thing by saying, oh, well, Trump says he's for the little guy and blah, 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 but they just promote stuff for billionaires. And they bring up environmental stuff as the reason.
Right.
Now, they were saying, oh, like regular people don't want the EPA gone and want dirty water. Like, they just promote stuff for billionaires. I'm sorry, but billionaires and big business are all signaling left wing companies, and yes. They do so by promoting policies that drive down wages for working Americans. This is not. That was another thing where I was like, I'm sorry, but who is really in the interest of the billionaires here? Is it Donald Trump? Or is it the people who want to drive down wages and endorse policies that are going to do that? Because environmental things yeah, like, nobody wants to ruin the environment. No, but this is a very small piece of the puzzle, and this, just because a candidate is, you know, like, hey, let's drill in Alaska, that doesn't tell me that they only care about billionaires. It, to me, that means, you know, they're just... That's one issue. But I believe that they're, the left is very much in the pocket of big business, and like Silicon Valley for sure is a totally left-wing thing that is a massive business. No, that is, you know, those are the billionaires that lord over us, you know.
Well, it's like the anti-fracking thing. Well, it's like, who financed that? It was the Saudi Arabians.
Of course, because
so the leftists are all promoting for Saudi Arabian oil interest.
Of course, I mean, they
are. Who are you? These are you want to talk about billionaires? The Saudi Arabians. Oh my gosh, that's like the 0.0001%.
Yeah, congratulations, Enviroweenies. You're pimping for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
that's all they do, and they don't even realize they're so dumb. They don't even look. They don't even follow the money. They didn't even look and see what...
John, they know where the money is. Ugh. It's all that pandering to Saudi Arabia.
The normie signaling person on Facebook and Twitter does not...
Oh, okay. Just, okay, right.
They're stupid. Journalists know. They just... They're all, you know, in each other's pockets. You know, they're all part of the same...
Well, most of them are rich kids, because there's no way you can make a living in that profession coming from the working class. You have to be subsidized by rich parents.
Yeah, I'll for sure.
Yeah, so you have no understanding of the working class.
But yeah, they're like these elite journalists. I'm sorry, but you're not convincing me when they say, "Oh, this is for the billionaires." I'm sorry, but you do not. That whole part of the documentary, I was like laughing. When I was watching it, going, these people think I'm retarded.
Yeah, they do. No, they really think you are, because
they think I'm some idiot, and that they think this is you know, they think this is the year 2002 or something.
Yeah. Well, that's how the left treats it. Yeah, that's how the left treats their constituents. Like the left treat their constituents like they're idiots. I've been there before. Been there, done that. Okay.
So. They're in the pocket of billionaires because of environmental issues. Give me a break. Yeah. You know, there are bigger things that affect people more deeply. And, you know, destroying the income of the middle class and the working class is a bigger deal to most people. And, you know, this fiasco, this healthcare fiasco that we've had is another example of that. We can't afford this kind of thing that's going on, but, you know, that's a much bigger issue.
When you get, say, over here, the moronic Greens Party saying, oh, we want to bring in 100,000 refugees. The average family sitting at home, or the average person at their house watching the news, will go, okay, so you want the system fucking sucked dry even more? And my wages are going to go down, or there's going to be no sort of growth in my wages to go along with the cost of living. But I'm supposed to be all about compassion. No, it's me and my family's existence that I'm worried about. Why am I going to have another 100,000 refugees coming here, sucking on the dole system, or taking away the jobs that could be going to us? Because, employers have to be... employ such X amount of minorities, and it's just ridiculous.
Well, and like, the thing is two things happen when you bring in a ton of people to the country. One is they get on the dole.
Yep.
And they drain the government pool. The other is they enter the workforce. And either way, it drives down the overall... It drives down wages, or it drives down it sucks the system dry, and you need to raise taxes. Either way, it's a drain on everybody, and something's got to give eventually.
I was just thinking, do you think we should post this to the Daily Stormer and see if they can put us on their feed from now on? That's the way it sounds.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. This is probably this episode.
It's probably about it's pretty far right, yeah. But
yeah, then yeah. we're
being but little... it's not like we're making shit up for the sake of making shit up. It's true.
The big defense. There is a big defense against us saying, if you complain about this sort of stuff, you're racist. But it's like, well, what about the blacks and Hispanics that will lose jobs to these immigrants? They don't even think about it. They act like there's no working class blacks or Hispanics who don't have their jobs threatened by, you know, cheap immigrant labor.
Oh, absolutely. They absolutely have their livelihoods threatened.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's
and Asians, my dry cleaner, I think, is basically Hispanic, you know, and there's also Vietnamese dry cleaners I go to.
The dry cleaners I go to are like, I'm not exactly sure. They're some Asian group, but
you guys still got a dry cleaners, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Clothes horse, you know.
Dying profession. All right.
We need our clothes to be as pressed as nice as Roger Stone's.
No, that's
the good luck on that one.
Yeah, he's hard to compete with. I have to say it, dude is a fashion hound.
Is Bill Clinton rape shirts?
Yeah, I had heard some whisperings that the fight with Chink Uyghur or whatever his name is was somewhat worked. Like a pro wrestling thing, but
well, it was.
I don't know. It's so embarrassing for Chink Uyghur. Either way, it's like I don't even care.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, that's one of the.
Roger, come over here. He wants to debate you.
But I noticed that Alex Jones's InfoWars, and I'm not an InfoWars listener.
Me neither. I watch Paul Joseph Watson occasionally, and that's it.
Yeah, same here. And but I noticed that InfoWars got more serious and more political and a lot less conspiracy once Roger Stone was making regular appearances. And I felt it was probably because Roger Stone was influencing Alex Jones.
Oh, for sure.
The pro-Trump direction, populist, political, patriotism sort of spin. It's a different spin years ago.
John, we've talked about, too, how The Blaze, Glenn Beck's company, has entered an existential crisis because Glenn Beck has become very left-wing.
Yeah.
And he's basically lost his his viewership. And so... Roger Stone probably told Glenn Beck, and this is just theorizing, but that this is a hole in the market that he could fill, and I think he has done that.
Right.
Because Alex Jones has become more of a mainstream figure. I remember when Alex Jones was kind of like a David Icke tier guy.
Yeah.
And now, you know, a lot of people I know watch InfoWars videos. They may just watch Paul Joseph Watson. I mean, I know a lot of people who like Paul Joseph Watson who do not watch Alex Jones stuff, you know, but they're definitely consuming InfoWars content.
Well, that's like my brother. My brother listens to InfoWars we were talking about the other day, but he doesn't like Paul Joseph Watson. I said, really? Why is that? And he goes, just can't stand him. It's like... But he makes a lot of sense when he talks. But he goes, no, not a fan of Paul Joseph Watson. So, okay, you know, everybody's got their likes and dislikes. So, whereas I just listen. I mean, honestly, I think if Alex Jones is too much to listen to, and he's tough on the ears with his voice and all that stuff, listen to The War Room, which is on the InfoWars channel with Owen Schroyer. He's like Alex Jones, not as, what's the term I'm looking for? Not as overly expressive as Alex is, but still gets the point across with humor as well. So that's only a new show. It's only been up a few months, but that's a good listen. Listen to Owen Schroyer.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah, there's that alternative on InfoWars if you don't want to listen to Alex Jones, which I do. Sometimes, but on a day-to-day basis, it's a grind, I tell you.
I find Alex Jones is... my thing with him is that he goes on these emotional tears that are just hard to digest. I just... Like, when he has, like, a breakdown, like... Or when... I remember one time he was talking about, like, Hollywood pedophiles or something. He was, like, talking about the Renfields and this.
Bloodsuckers
and... He goes on and on and on about these literary metaphors about, like, these Bram Stoker
Yeah, he starts metaphor. To sound like a. It sounds like a lost Dusty Rhodes promo or something. Superstar Billy Graham or Kevin Sullivan or something. It's like a crazy wrestling promo.
I think Alex Jones is a great meme, and Alex Jones knows he's a great meme too.
Yeah.
But his content is not my thing.
Right.
But I think InfoWars has grown considerably because I think Stone has helped guide Jones in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I even thought years ago when I was listening to InfoWars to make fun of it on a radio show, I kept telling some higher-ups and some conservative elements that I know, I said, they need to look at how Alex Jones appeals to young people and how he's gotten Ron Paul across as some sort of hero to young people, which is hard to believe when you actually watch a Ron Paul interview that anybody cares. But it's like if they'd study the way he promotes, it's like they'd win an election. They wouldn't lose to an Obama. And, of course, to me, Trump was the first candidate to actually use the InfoWars influence in his favor.
Yeah, for sure.
Trump would appear on InfoWars and talk to Alex Jones. Which
yeah, there's it's in this documentary. You see,
yeah.
Yes.
I'm talking to Alex. Yeah.
Since the New Yorker types, these New York City bugmen media geeks to it's like in sent them into tizzy. They're just foaming at the mouth over that type of stuff. But that's,
I remember Trump went on Carolla's podcast. He go on there and be like, Adam, I think you do a great job on your show. I think it's great. When are we going to start recording? And he's like, well, we're recording right now. Oh. But it was just funny. Like, Trump was just calling, like...
He was calling it a Michael Savage.
Well, but what I loved, though, was that he calls into Carolla, and he doesn't know that he's on the show.
Yeah.
And... the whole time he's just talking to Adam. He's just like talking about how great he thinks Adam is, how he loves his show, and how he thinks he's doing a great thing, and he thinks he does a great job with everything. And then he's like, "When do we start recording?" Adam's like, "Well, we're recording right now." And he's like, "Oh, okay." And I was like sitting there going, all he did was say nice things. It wasn't like he went on there and was like, oh, F.
Yeah.
He didn't let some mask slip,
Yeah, not like John Kerry has let slip in some interviews. I remember Jesse Jackson saying about how he wanted to cut his nuts off.
Yeah, he wants to cut his nuts off because he's talking down to black people, yeah.
But Trump would call Michael Savage a shit, which is probably a Roger Stone move as well.
Yeah, just like having him call in.
Yeah,
like just the call in is such a good move,
Yeah.
But I think this documentary overblows Stone's influence.
Yeah,
by a lot. This is a documentary that is trying to make Roger Stone the new Karl
Trump's
Rove.
Brain. Trump.
But yeah, they want him to be
Trump's
what Karl. What Karl Rove was to Bush, what Lee Atwater was to Reagan and Bush Sr., they want Roger Stone to be for Trump. The problem is that Roger Stone is very likable. He's funny. He doesn't seem to care what you think about him, and that makes him appealing. And these journalists who appear in the show just seem like...
Bugmen.
They seem like... the church lady from the David Carpet, like where they're like talking, this is so bad, and they're all just like wow, just wowing, and meanwhile Roger Stone over here is having more fun than a person should be allowed to have.
He's having a blast, and he's got charisma, and they are the new church ladies, as Jim Goad is.
Jim Goad wrote that book, The New Church Ladies.
And which he says he got from Jack Donovan. He got that phrase.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he told Jack Donovan that he got the phrase from him. And Jack Donovan didn't remember ever using it, so that was amazing. But the whole thing is, that's why it backfires, is because Stone is charisma, and these geeks are not. Mm-hmm. And his candidate wins, and his guy wins, and it's changed the dynamic. And it seems like the media and documentary filmmakers are the last to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
It's like they still believe the bullshit 98% Hillary victory polls that were going around until the night of the election, which was
well,
just
and like, and this documentary ends with, this is America now, and this is like, you know, Donald, like Roger Stone is the architect of their misery.
Yeah.
When they're the architects of their own misery.
Exactly.
They've gotten away with their crap for so long.
Yeah.
And now the chickens have come home to roost, and the Trump candidacy ripped the mask off the media, ripped the mask off the Republicans and the Democrats to show them for the colluding insects that they are.
Yeah.
And this showed everybody that. And that's why one thing about this documentary that's hilarious, because a lot of them haven't figured it out yet. They still live in their bug world where they think that they still control the narrative, that they still can do something to make Roger Stone this Karl Rove type character. And that's just not the case.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's not how it works anymore.
No, and look how you see it with the Alabama senatorial race with the charges against what's his name, Roy Moore. Is that who it is? I mean, it's endless. As of this recording, that was the top topic a couple of weeks ago. Now it's Al Franken and Charlie Rose, two prominent media liberals in positions of power, getting in for sex harassment or groping and all this. And it's like, haven't heard Roger Stone come up on charges.
Nope.
Who looks like the creep now, you know?
No, that's what's great about this Hollywood thing is that, you know, one of the big Alinsky things is, I talked about this earlier, hold the enemy to their standards, but don't have any standards of your own. It's becoming very apparent that they've been doing that, holding people to their standards, but they do not have standards of their own. And the problem with not having standards of your own is that you look like a jerk to most people when you don't have those standards and you do the things that you've been criticizing your enemies for doing. And Roger Stone, you know, is a sexual degenerate. You know, he does stuff sexually that I find repulsive, but he does not LARP as some social conservative.
Exactly. He's pretty open about it. He's walking around with his shirt off in the gay pride parade.
Yeah, and flipping off people booing him.
Yeah. Good for him.
Like, to be honest, I think that's hilarious. Going through a gay pride parade, I mean, it's a good troll. Going through a gay pride parade and triggering everybody there, and he's just, you know, whatever, I'm proud of what I am. You know, this was a pride parade. You know? I'm supposed to have pride in something. But
interesting thing about Roger Stone is I followed him on Twitter when he was around. He opened for Edgar Winter and Rick Derringer in Florida. He actually came out, I guess, and played some blues tunes or something.
My goodness.
So there's elements of Roger Stone that did not make it into this documentary that are pretty interesting.
Huh.
But he's like friends with apparently Rick Derringer and Edgar Winter. And Rick Derringer, I believe, is out as a conservative.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, so do we have any closing thoughts? I think we're kind of towards the end of this topic, unless people have other.
Do you guys think there'll ever be somebody as influential as Roger Stone once his time's up? You reckon?
Absolutely. Yeah,
there always will be. There always will be.
With this longevity, somebody. I mean, you're talking 40-something years he's done this. It's a long time.
I mean, yeah, and I think Roger Stone's influence has increased over those years. Because you cannot discount other operatives like Lee Atwater, Paul Manafort, who's currently in trouble in the news. You cannot discount somebody like Karl Rove, as repulsive as Karl Rove is.
No, he's awful.
And Karl Rove is just... he's just a slug. Like, pour salt on him and just let him go away.
Well, melt green. The other thing is, I think there's going to be more Roger Stone types because our media is way more hyper-political than it was just in Roger Stone's era and even just 10 years ago. It's worse. It is politics 24/7. And I also think the oppressive over-politicalization of movies and TV, of what's supposed to be entertainment, and it's all political. You cannot go to a movie today without some stupid virtue signaling. And it's like, I think that's going to have a backlash effect among and the future it, Roger think, Stones I, growing up.
I think it's having a backlash effect currently.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely I see it everywhere. I mean, yeah. I don't want to get into it on the show, but I see it.
Right.
And, you know, what we are currently experiencing in politics is a paradigm shift. And it's going to be very interesting. I think the next decade, I think 2027, it's going to be very interesting to see where we are then.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if even crap like Facebook and Twitter are even around.
No, and I don't think they will be. I mean, I think Facebook, I was reading some stats recently about Facebook and how people don't share personal things. I never share anything personal on Facebook.
I'm getting to where I'm not even political on Facebook.
I
don't share anything personal, political. I just post movie reviews and podcasts. That's it.
I posted something about the gay marriage getting passed through here, and oh boy, did I cop a ton of shit.
I saw you there. I was like, Stu's trolling.
Oh no, I was genuinely upset. I mean,
I know you were. I'm not suggesting you were. Yeah, but
it was just.
But you know, with Facebook, I mean, my interactions on Facebook. I do not use Facebook for people I know. I interact with our listeners. I interact with some various groups I'm in, but most of the people I talk with on Facebook are people I don't know in real life. And, you know, most of my Facebook stuff is about the show and stuff like that. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. I think Facebook is a very alienating social experiment.
Yeah,
it is. And I just read the Attention Merchants, a book about, you know, the various forms of social media over the years and what they do to get your advertising dollar. And it pointed out that in Facebook, no one really says what they're feeling on Facebook. They can't. Everybody is expressing this viewpoint of being this model citizen or this very normal person or kids. They said in many ways, and this is basically more oppressive than what was in the 1950s. That everybody always complains about. Oh, it was oppressive. Everybody's trying to look like Leave It to Beaver.
It's all a Douglas Sirk movie.
Yeah. What is Facebook but a bunch of fucking virtue signaling and everybody's some sort of conformist? It's absolute insanity. It's crazy if you really look at it from a distant, you know, a more skeptical eye. It's like, no, this is way more oppressive than the 50s.
Yeah. Facebook is a failed. It's a social experiment, and it's a failed one. And I think Facebook and Twitter, their time is limited, and it's not going to be something that's – I think that there's an attempt to make it this is the totalitarian internet, and we're going to run the internet.
Yeah, I think Twitter allowing, what, 240 words now or 240 – like they've doubled like the amount of wordage allowed in a tweet, and it's like, I think that's a sign of weakness.
It is. Yeah.
I think it really is. I think Twitter, Facebook, I think these are companies living on borrowed time, and they're going to, like the mainstream media, be sort of living on borrowed time with like limited viewership and usership in that case.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, let's go ahead and rate Get Me Roger Stone. I personally give it a 6 out of 10. I think it's a very entertaining documentary. The reason I give it a 6 rather than a higher rating, even though I would highly recommend it, I would highly recommend anybody watch it. The reason I give it a lower rating is that I think the film is a failure in what it tries to do, but it's a failure in a good way. I think, you know, it's a film that wants to create this supervillain, but in a way it creates a superhero. And that's why it loses some points, because it's not, it doesn't do what it sets out to do very well.
Right.
What would you give it, Stu?
8 for me.
8. It's very entertaining. So
it is very entertaining. All the left-wing sort of rhetoric through it about how awful Roger Stone is, I don't care. Just push it aside. I still enjoyed it. I think Roger Stone's a very influential person and a very bright guy as well.
Yeah.
And he knows how to marry a fucking good-looking wife, or second wife anyway.
His first wife seems to still be friendly with him.
Yeah, she does. But
she worked with the Trump campaign. John, what about you?
I give it a 6.5 and only downgraded in ratings because of the high Bugman content.
Yeah, it's a very, there's a lot of Bugman in this movie, and you know they need a can of Raid to fight them off. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix streaming. Give it a watch. It's if you're a political junkie, it is quality entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, and quality so you can laugh at the wow, just wowing going on in it.
There is a lot of that. I can't believe this. Why?
Oh,
why?
It's so can you believe like the stuff he says? And you know, yeah,
who
I can.
Who talks like that? What?
Anyway, before we go, let me bring up something released today over here in Australia only. John, I don't know if you saw the comment I just tagged you in on Shitbook. Yeah, new Mike Hammer TV series from 86, 87 on DVD.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work some overtime. I have to order this right away.
Well, yeah, considering off Five Vision site, it's like $80. Off JB, it's $50. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, once I'm done with this, so I'm going to jump in the shower and head down to my local, and pick it up.
I've been waiting for this forever. And of course, the minute I buy it, they'll announce an American release.
Yeah, probably. But it's saying here all four seasons in one collection, which would be Mike Hammer and the new Mike Hammer. But this is saying it's only the new Mike Hammer. I don't know. I have to work it out. I think
it looks like it's the seasons were short because it started as a mid-season replacement, and which means there were only like I think 6 or 7 episodes to begin with in the first season, and also his cocaine arrest in England cut down on production, so they didn't make as many episodes as a normal show would have.
I think it's the only. It's saying here all four seasons. I think it's actually only two. I think it's the only two seasons they had for the new Mark Hammer, which was 86, 87. But I mean, if they got their hands on that, there's most likely they're going to get their hands on the original Mike Hammer one from 84-85. But I got to have this one regardless. I'm not going to pass this up. Not at $50.
This is the original run that I can think of from what I remember. Because it says it also has the TV movies.
Yeah.
So, well, let's see. That's Murder, The Return of Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer, 86. And Murder Takes All. And
the
earliest was 1984, I think. So
yeah.
I'll have to go to IMDb and try to track back the production a bit.
Yeah. But But without a doubt, going to have to get that one. So yeah, there's that. So.
All right, brothers. Mm-hmm. Well, go to MidnightMovieCowboys.com. If you want to donate, hit that donate button on the right-hand side. But if not, if you want to support the show, rate and review us on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. And email us at MidnightMovieCowboys@gmail.com. And go to our Facebook group, Midnight Movie Cowboys. Lots of good discussion there. It's a pretty lively group. That's where I spend most of my time these days.
Yeah. That's right.
Online.
Just don't expect to get let in as easy as you think it will be.
No. We don't accept just anybody.
There's a bit of a screening process. Oh, and also all the Indians and Malaysians that who have joined Facebook 3 days before and now members of 800 groups, you ain't getting in. Sorry, don't bother.
No, if you're a member of 800 groups and you've been on Facebook for 2 days, we're not letting you in.
No, you're not coming in.
And you know, why even say it? Because they're not listening to this show. So
probably not. But I mean, just a friendly warning. That's all.
Just a friendly warning.
Yes.
Anyway.
All right.
Well, anything else, fellas?
No, nothing off the top of my head.
All right, well, with that, I think I'm going to say adios.
Say Magadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.